From Plant Lab in Austin, Texas, this is Stacker News Live!
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the exciting episode of Stacker News Live. My name is Carl. I'm going to be with Keon. Keon, shaky intro there, but got it going.
Yeah, you got it. You got it. You figured it out.
How was your week?
It was great. It was a great week. Everyone's gone in some form. You're gone. You're wherever you are. You have like a blurry background, but it looks very like sort of like suburban metropolitan.
Does it look real or does it look fake?
It looks fake as fuck, man.
Okay, here. So I'm going to grab this. Throw it. Oh crap. It's real.
Oh, you just proved it's real. It's real. It looks fake. Yeah. You guys are in like a mansion or something. It looks nice.
Yeah.
I think some people are gone for the Freedom Fest, Oslo Freedom Fest.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Dude, yeah, it's like half empty here.
Yeah, it's a whole week. Like I feel like there's all these events, all these conferences going on, and then Austin just dies down when school lets out, and it's never been hotter, humid over there in Austin. I'm in Denver right now, and it's freaking amazing, dude. So gorgeous. Did you know you could take a train to Union Station, and that's a whole thing?
I didn't know. I've never been to Denver before.
Dude, it's beautiful. It's clean out there. It's like clean. It's immaculate. You can eat off the floor of the streets over here. It's wild.
Really?
Wow. Yes, that's, I was really
homeless
shocked.
People. What about homeless? Are they?
I didn't see any homeless people.
It's probably hard to. Yeah, high altitude. You're not near a coast. Gets freezing. You know, you get a lot of snow. That doesn't really attract homeless people.
Yeah, and then I was in Guadalajara earlier this week. Man, what a great Bitcoin community down there. Gosh, like really exceptional group of Bitcoiners down there. Led by Chris Guida, our friend, and yeah, man, really cool hanging out with them for a day or two, and yeah, just excited to get through this weekend and then get back to Austin and get back to it.
I wanted to ask though about if Chris is running Guadalajara, do they have like knots, like Bitcoin knots flags, and are they preparing for Bitcoin 10?
No, we did. I did ask him some questions. I probably will write a post with his permission later to see if he's okay with it. But we did talk about it. Like he's open to talk about everything. And I think that was like the coolest thing was just like asking him how he sees it playing out and like all this stuff. I think not speaking for him, but I think just the growing, just you've seen, and we've talked about it on the show many times. It's just like the space, the Bitcoin ecosystem right now is like kind of fragmented a bit. Like you have a lot of these different types of people doing different things that we aren't accustomed to as Bitcoiners. And so that kind of makes everything a little bit more decentralized, which I think is good. It's part of growth and decentralization and that sort of thing. But I think you're going to have people that are always going to wave that Bitcoin flag. And, you know, they tend to be the lifeblood of the ecosystem from what I can tell, at least seeing it for the past, you know, whatever it's been, 10 years, 7 years.
Wow, 10 years already.
Yeah.
It's a long while. Yeah, I think they are important, or at least they are a segment of Bitcoin culture that you can kind of recognize and identify easily. I don't know, but it's pros and cons, but it is nice to have like that anchor. It's like a place for everyone to kind of ideologically meet, and even to like define, even if they don't agree with it, they can like define themselves against that core group of Bitcoiners. And I think it helps keep us together as a unit.
Just absolutely
just like that.
Yeah, I think so. And I think you need people working on these different types of things. Like I was really shocked with how much people. Oh, I lost you. Where did you go?
My bad. I think I hit a button. I have like controls here. My bad.
Oh, you do? Okay, that's good to know. Can you share a screen from there or no?
I think I can, yeah, do all kinds of things from here.
Oh, cool.
I just thought I was trying to make the screen bigger, and I made your screen bigger.
Yeah, I think what I was going to say real quick is I think there's room for enough growth right now. There's a lot of people leaving the ecosystem right now. A lot of things shutting down. And I think now is the time if you ever wanted to, to make that next move into like building your own whatever, community, project, startup, career, this is the right time to do it because we need fresh new people to come in right now.
It would help to see some new people. I haven't seen many like no coiners at like meetups or events or anything. And it's a form of energy that we don't really have in the space anymore. Where people are it's like there is no mystique. There's not much mystique to Bitcoin after the ETFs, and that's the biggest impact of the ETFs for me. It's like we don't see no coiners at meetups trying to figure out what Bitcoin is anymore because they can just they could put it in their Vanguard or whoever. I don't know.
I suspect, and just from seeing in Mexico, I suspect a lot of that growth is going to come from other countries. I think just from what I can tell, I don't know. My view on this is very small, but to me, I feel like it's going to come from other countries. It's not going to come from America as far as like the peer-to-peer aspect of it.
So you see more peer-to-peer activity in Mexico than
So we're going to do Startup Day over there. And I was talking about the project that they're building called Ambrosia. And I don't want to give anything away, but it looks really cool. So
Ambrosia is a great
Anyways, let's jump into the show. I haven't been posting too much on Stacker News this week. I did sneak in some. So I didn't bring a carry on. All I brought was my backpack. I did bring in a whole bag of like goodies to bring to Mexico. Dude, they didn't even check it. I just walked right through the gate. They didn't even charge me for it. It made it through customs. Dude, the yellow hat, man. People just do not feel intimidated by it.
I guess not. It's just a hat. You mentioned that in chat.
I had it on top. Imagine your yellow hat in a bag, like an HEB bag on top. So no one like wanted to look through it. Like it was just like, eh.
Well, I mean, no one's really smuggling anything into Mexico, right? I think that's who does that? Like, why do that?
Yeah.
Except maybe trade secrets.
Well, I snuck in some Stacker News swag and nothing. So anyways, I thought that was funny. All right. With all that, let's jump into the top three stories this week. If you've never seen this crazy show, it's called Stacker News Live. And you can go to YouTube. You type in Stacker News Live. And then you'll see this wonderful show that we do every week. Now in vertical mode. We've been posting a lot of clips. Wombo's been posting more clips. He's getting really funny with these. We're going to talk about a lot of the comments. We have like 30 comments now. We might have too many comments now to like cover every week just because we're doing shorts. We're doing shorts now too. So people comment on everything, dude. So we might have to not do comments. Just That's depends. Cool. Show is getting bigger and we haven't even reached 1,000 subscribers. I don't know why people keep subscribing, but I think it's just a lot of new people. There's just something about that yellow. I'm telling you, it's just the yellow, and they're just like, you know what? Sure.
I'm going to give it a shot.
All right, let's jump into the top three stories. Number three top story is Bitcoin is a form of power. The Bitcoin is money meme must die. This is from Delta Climbs, 11,000 sats. Keon, what is this?
Yeah, so this post is a bit abstract and a bit philosophical, but I think what Delta Climbs means is that thinking of Bitcoin as just money is, and like just relating to economics, is like too narrow, and Bitcoiners need to be thinking more broadly and considering more aspects of reality than just the financial aspect in order to maybe either convince people that Bitcoin is something they should be interested in, or as a matter of like improving their own lives and their own well-being, like using Bitcoin perhaps as it's intended to make your full life better, and not become like the only aspect of your life. That's more or less what they're kind of getting to here. Is that we all take Bitcoin a little narrowly, and that we are maybe a little too tied to our identity as outsiders. Mm-hmm. Is another like aspect of this. And that we're just kind of not meeting reality because we're so comfortable on the outside. We're not really meeting reality where it is and interacting with reality where it is. There's this other point in here about power and how we don't really, because it's not exactly tied to money, although you can tie it together, but it is like this kind of thing that maybe supersedes money, is more important than money. And they're also arguing that we should grapple with that a little more seriously than just like the economic aspect. And how does Bitcoin relate to power more is like another thing they say. It's very, you know, it's very philosophical. But I think it's pretty interesting. I think it reminds me of some of the earlier writing that I've come across in Bitcoin that was written by like philosopher kings, where it's like, you know, it's more heady and it's more like saying, trying to tie Bitcoin to like, you know, deep kind of metaphysical things. And that's kind of what I got from it. But
yeah, we had the top comment from Foss Fawcett, and it was this. Yeah, so
it's a clip from Billions if you haven't seen the show.
Yeah, I've never seen the show, but I know that actor's a great actor.
He is really good.
So what do they mean? What do they mean by that? Do they just mean that by the type of, because Bitcoin's the type of money that, you know, no one can really touch, right? Like you can walk across borders with a brain wallet if you wanted to, and no one could touch you, theoretically.
Yeah, I think it just thinks
no one can steal it from you, I guess you could say.
I think that's part. You know, there's some stuff in there about where Bitcoin gets its power and why it's powerful. But I think it's more so about Bitcoiners aren't thinking about things beyond the financial aspect of Bitcoin, and they're thinking too much in terms of
price.
Again, being an outsider, price, financial stuff, economics, and less so tying in Bitcoin to like greater philosophical things. Thinking a lot about how Bitcoin exists in the future, while not thinking about it, where it sits in the present and how to kind of move it incrementally forward in the present. Because we're just so set on Bitcoin is the ultimate money. And right. So people are eventually going to get there. So we kind of ignore maybe the present. Just things like that. He also talks crap about all of the treasury companies in a kind of like a shrouded way, a sort of subtle way. Also, Stacker News digs at Stacker News and calls micropayments a hippie phenomenon, which I fully embrace. Yeah, I thought it was pretty. It was fun. I've met Delta Climbs in person before, and they're a really smart, intense person, and kind of cool to see them riding on Stacker News.
Yeah, I think the most interesting thing I've seen in the Bitcoin space, at least where I'm at now, compared to like maybe a year ago or even 2 years ago, and I think it just takes time. The longer you're in, I think there's just a ton of people just experimenting, and I think the thing that only still drives me a little bit mad is the scamming. But that's about it. That's everything else I'm okay with for the most part. I've gotten better over time. It's just the scamming that's a little too much for me. But outside of that, it's people are trying new things. I don't know how you feel about it compared to maybe a year ago, even 2 years ago, that you've shifted.
The culture is definitely softened a bit. I mean, we see here, like even in Austin here, we see like bit devs kind of taking a hiatus. People, like, I think the energy is kind of like the momentum around Bitcoin is kind of dissolved among developers, where I think some of them see their they don't see themselves as front and center anymore, or their roles are not really that important, maybe because of the ETFs, maybe because of the treasury companies, they're kind of taking a lot of that energy, stealing a lot of that energy, getting all the attention of the no coiners that they had before. That could be part of it. Scams have definitely always been a part of Bitcoin, but I wonder, I mean, I've never really worked so deeply in an industry before. And so I'm not sure if in other industries there's the same phenomenon. Like, imagine you have an AI startup right now. Imagine there are all kinds of scams that you see that you can identify in the AI world where you're like, man, those guys are such freaking scammers. And so I wonder if that exists.
Well, it's the LOI stuff, right? It's all the LOI stuff in the AI space. And we're kind of drifting
from LOI? Topic.
Letter of intent. So it's like, oh, we're going to pay you this amount of money. You know, and you see a lot of that in the AI startup space.
Oh, kind of like circular.
Yeah, because that looks really good for investors. And so, I think you're right. Maybe our ecosystem is just like every other ecosystem, and there's scammers everywhere. And maybe it's not as bad as other ecosystems, even though we want it to be better. If it's not as bad as other ecosystems, I don't know.
Oh, that's actually an interesting point. Yeah, maybe actually because Bitcoin is so honest and like verifiable, the scam, while it appears like there are lots of scams on the surface, like underneath, the scams like die. They get killed pretty fast. And so compared to these other ecosystems where it's really hard to prove anything, we maybe do a better job with scams than they ever will.
Well, you know that adage in Bitcoin where it's like, stay humble and you'll see your enemies fly by the river or something like that. I remember people
float by.
Yeah. I remember people would say that on social media when I first came in, and I was like, what does that mean? But I now, after going through, this will be the second bear market that I'm going through as a business. And yeah, I understand what that means now.
Yeah, I never really identified with the humble part too much, because it was always, I've never been. Huh?
Because you're not.
I mean, that's one interpretation. It's more. It's always like, why wouldn't you be humble? Is kind of what I like. I don't understand anything. But I don't really understand anything except, like, that's like the base case for me. That's like the default. You should be humble.
Yeah.
So the reminders always struck me as kind of odd. It's like, are people really that like out of their mind that they can't? That they lose their humility over financial gains or whatever gains. I don't know what other gains they're measuring. Yeah.
I see. This is where the humble thing kind of loses me too, because I'm definitely not humble. I'm working on it, but my mom didn't raise us to be like egotistical, but she did raise us to be the best. And so I've always had that confidence, and I don't know if that's not being humble, but. So like not believing yourself is just like, to me, I don't see why. If I'm not my number one fan, then who's gonna be, right? Like, I feel like you have to believe in yourself to do things, and that's how I was raised. So it's kind of like hard to like lose that sense of ego, even though like ego is good in some ways, but it's also bad in other ways. So you kind of have to, at least for me, I feel like I always have to balance it out.
Well, there are different forms of ego. Like I believe in myself, but I don't believe in it landing with other people.
yeah.
And so so it shows up as like, I have no ego at all most of the time, or I have like self-esteem issues, which I do have, but I like, it's more like, I don't know, for me, my mom comes from like an Irish kind of family, and I would just get roasted all the time by her side. And then my dad is like quiet, never speaks. Iranian who just works his ass off and like kills himself working, and that's my so my mom is like constantly humbling me while my dad is showing me what heart. So I don't really have much of the like showboaty. Anyway, while we're talking about childhoods, isn't a therapy session, but
this is what we do. Cool. That's the number three top story this week. We're gonna jump into the next one, which is Number two, BTC vote. Do you feel bullish or bearish on Bitcoin? This is from CoinVote. 14 comments, 12,000 sats. Keon, what is this?
Yeah, so this is in the top stories because it got boosted about 10,000 sats. But CoinVote is a kind of weird, mostly because it's using on-chain Bitcoin, and that seems like so vintage. But it's kind of like a prediction market thing.
Cool.
But not exactly a prediction market where you vote on things by signing with your Bitcoin keys. So you sign. So like in this case, it looks like there were 8 people who signed that they were bearish on Bitcoin on its like future price. How many people do we have there? 8 addresses.
So what is total. The BTC address? Is that just aggregating everybody's Bitcoin, whoever's signing?
Yeah, so that's how much that's how much coin participated in signing in favor of bearish, and then it looks like only one address of only 2 million sats or so.
What an interesting idea! Who made this?
Bullish.
Who made?
I don't actually know. I don't think they reveal their identity. It's kind of a quirky platform for a bit of research for this, because they've been posting on Stacker News for a while since they launched, and I went back and reread some of their earlier posts about like what they were thinking, and they think that there might be something to people signing with how much Bitcoin they have, that might suggest that might be more important, that might make the votes mean something more than like clicking a button like you would do somewhere else. Like you actually are proving that you are a real person who has real Bitcoin.
So your vote matters.
So your vote matters a little more, such that you might be able to establish more signal or identify more signal around the results than you would without it. Yeah.
Does it dox your address though, or your, because I don't know how the heuristics work behind the scenes, but
I think so. Yeah.
It does necessarily dox your address.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's how they know how much Bitcoin is contributed to each option.
Interesting.
Yeah, they can look it up and verify it.
So what was the actual vote then? I guess to get after we get past the whole tech part of it.
Oh, yeah. Well, the actual vote part is that
do you feel bullish or bearish on Bitcoin?
Yeah, by the end of June 2026, will the price be higher or lower than $75,500 when it was what the price was when they put this up?
Yeah, this is accurate. Bearish.
You're bearish? You're bearish?
Bearish, yeah.
I'm pretty bullish. I don't know, but
yeah. Yeah. I don't know what the price is going to be, but I do think it's going to continue to go down.
I think it's always good to assume Bitcoin's price is going to go down.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, the only like talk or thing I've read about price is from Arthur Hayes, and Arthur Hayes is always like, it's coming. We're going to be anytime now that there's going to be a bunch of liquidity and the price is going to go up. I don't really pay attention otherwise, but so I'm kind of bullish. I think wartime means money printing. And we are set up for all kinds of wars right now. I don't know.
Yeah, we're going to talk about it later in the show. There's a couple ones. The number one top story this week is a crude demo, impact of disclosing your state and birthday from Optimism. 24 comments, 14,000 sats. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, he calls this crude, but I think it's actually more like Eli 5, explain it like I'm 5 type of introduction into why things like soft KYC or like simple measures of revealing your identity actually reveal way more than you think they would. But he kind of breaks down numerically using you know accurate numbers, but like large categories of things, how you can go from being, as far as like a service that you're using or anywhere online that you're using, being just a United States citizen, to then being able to whittle it down to exactly who you are with just like a few pieces of information. He starts with the United States population, and then you reveal the state that you're in. That whittles it down from 335 million people to 6.7 million people. And then you reveal your actual birth date, and that takes it from 6.7 million people down to 229 people in the United States. And then, if you do anything else beyond, if you reveal even more information beyond that, it gets, your anonymity gets even smaller and smaller to the point where you're trivial to identify. It's just kind of pointing out that your anonymity online is very fragile. And so any kind of leaks about your IP address, your state, even your country, ideally you're using a VPN. Although using a VPN in the United States is probably okay if that's the only information you reveal, it's probably safer to use another country's IP address. It's very sketchy, or it's very easy to reveal who you are on the internet.
Yeah, it's kind of wild that it's that simple. It's crazy. Yeah, that is insane. I saw a clip of a Tucker Carlson video where they brought on an ethical hacker, and he was able to reveal Tucker Carlson's social security number, his driver's license number, when his last trip to certain states were. It's pretty crazy. And then Tucker revealed that he has gold bars buried. So there's no point of coming after him if you're trying to rob him, he said. So
I don't know.
Wild times, man. This is wild times. But yeah, I think that there was a breach in America. I think the guy had said, you know, a few years ago, right around COVID. So everybody's information got doxed. I don't know. I'm a big fan of just having two identities. I think if you have two identities, you're better off. So go buy yourself an identity. That's what I would say.
Where can you buy an identity these days? Silk Road
is
online.
I know. But that's what I would do if I was you. Because I think you got to just admit, like, one side, like, whatever version you are right now is, like, if you're Coob right now, you're doxed, right? If you're Car, you're doxed. But let's say you have an alternate identity, then at that point, that identity is not doxed. I don't know if that helps you or not, but maybe it's a breaking case of emergency type of situation. So,
yeah, definitely. It's definitely a nice preparation for a potential issue in the future.
This is not financial advice. Natalia had the top comment, or did she have the top comment? Yep. Yeah, wait, hang on. What was it? Nope, Simple Stacker had the top comment. He said, this belongs in math too, the math territory.
Yeah, because it involves math. Some simple math, but it is, you know, it's kind of a really powerful form of math. Simple Stacker actually went and wrote, they've since deleted it, but they went and wrote another post about some of the research they were involved in. And that they kind of explained how it applied, how it helped them with the research, this ability to, like, narrow down a large set of people to a much smaller set using correlated information. They deleted it. Yeah.
Oh, you deleted it. Okay. Well, there you go. Yeah. It looks like Optimism replied on it.
Yeah.
Cool stuff. Yeah. That's alarming. I guess, I don't know what else
to say. Be careful. Yeah, anywhere that's asking, especially anywhere that's asking for, when you get asked these questions on a website, imagine that they're trying to figure out who you are without asking explicitly.
Every time you get on a plane, right, you're like,
you're done.
Yeah, you're done.
Yeah.
You've ever taken any plane trip, you're done.
I mean, maybe if you fly private, you can achieve some privacy. I don't know, though. I've never flown private before.
Even if you get on a bus or a train, you're still done.
They definitely have your face, but you can wear a disguise. And the cameras can't see through those yet, I don't think.
Yeah. All right. That's all the top three stories on Stacker News this week, as far as the top ones. We're going to jump into Wumble's picks this week. He said, what follows after liberal democracy? This is from Kepford. Do you read this, Keon?
Actually, I actually forgot about this again. It's easy for me to forget about Wumbo's picks for some reason. I need to get back on it. But it's pretty, I mean, I don't think about politics a whole lot. I used to think about them a lot when I was like an anarchist and identified strongly with like anarcho-capitalism stuff. But what comes after? I would personally say we probably do away with most government. Like we make it, rather than coordinating in a centralized way, we kind of decentralize government to the extent that technology allows us. And it's like, it's mostly a thing that's unlocked by technology, not time, but like us working towards removing all the problems with liberal democracy. We're not needing anymore a central structure to impose rules on people because we've kind of encoded them somehow in the fabric of society. That's what if we're talking like sci-fi, that's kind of what I think probably happens. Or we all get killed by robots.
I think all the level one countries go to a totalitarian state. That's what I think. That's where I think it's coming next. His question was, if the USA switches government type in the future, what do you think the new version will look like? Yeah, I think totalitarian. That's what I think. Keon, what do you think?
I mean, in the short to medium term, yeah, we're probably talking totalitarian sort of dictatorial, sort of total police state. Makes a lot of sense. Although my hope is in the United States that when the government crumbles, or if it has like if it recedes from its current place, the Constitution keeps it from becoming totalitarian, and so instead it becomes more free because there's like this backstop of like you can't do everything that you really want to do with totalitarianism, so it never really takes hold. But I don't know. There was like just a few years ago, people were talking about how the Constitution needs to be replaced. So it seemed, and like among people that I know or knew at the time, chronically online folks in Silicon Valley, but they were like, yeah, the Constitution's kind of outdated. So maybe that isn't much of a backstop at all, but I still hold hope that it might be.
Yeah. I'm exaggerating a little bit and making a joke, but I hope it doesn't go totalitarian, but it's so hard not to see that it goes that way. But hopefully that takes hundreds of years. I think best case scenario, you know, maybe we learn from our mistakes and we get better leaders. Best case scenario.
Yeah, that seems so hard though, because most people do not want to lead.
Yeah.
I mean, we thought everyone thought that was like one of the things that people sold Trump with, was like, this guy is outside the system and he doesn't really want to lead, but he's, you know, he just cares so much, so deeply. And it turns out over time or whatever, he just kind of got eroded into exactly what every politician was before, where they're doing things with the government's power for money or for their own benefit or their legacy or whatever.
Wumble, that's the best we got this week on your picks. That's Wumble's picks. We're going to jump into some more controversial stuff this week. This was an AI post that Wumble helped us with. Keon, you actually posted it on here. It's called Pope Leo on Safeguarding the Human Person in the Time of Artificial Intelligence. Did you see his Magnifica Humanitas post?
I did not read it. It's a lot. It's, you know, it's biblical in size. So I did not read it. But I knew it was important and people would be reading it. And I was curious what they thought about it to the extent that they did read it. And that's how I shared it.
I started reading the beginning part of it. It reads exactly like, I forget what they're called. Episcopals or no, not Episcopals. So basically I put a video inside the Stacker News news item for this one, but from what I could gather, it sounds like Pope Leo the 13th, 135 years ago, was somebody who was Pope at the time of the turn of the century when like the Industrial Revolution was taken off. And so he actually timed it to the exact day to release it, May 15th, on the last one that Pope Leo the 13th released. So there's a lot of like similarities there. From what I could gather, and it seems like most, you know, Christian or Catholic or whatever you want to call them, tech leaders already do this by nature. And that is just like discern, try to have a moral life or a moral material life and lead with purpose, basically. There's a this video I found to be the best one because this is from Frere. This is from Frere. Gosh, what's his name?
Looks like Jack Dorsey, actually.
Well, he's like one of the few people that I follow that actually understands technology because he uses it. So he's somebody that I think would be able to take what Pope Leo is saying and then kind of tell us in a tech way what that really means. Because of all the people I listen to, he's probably the one that's like the most tech aware. So this is kind of how he sums it up right now. I don't know if you can hear this.
I can't hear it.
Yeah, that's kind of, he sums it up like that. And to me, that's kind of exactly where I think he was coming from. Obviously, I think the title of the thing that he chose was very like it scared a lot of people. It made people take notice, but it was literally his first, what is it called? He talks about it right here. Is that it right there? Yeah, encyclicals. That's what it's called. Encyclicals. That's what they're called. And so every pope has writes these letters to the flock, to all the parishioners, all the bishops, to the church, basically. And this is his first encyclicals. And he was making a joke on here because I think it was Pope Leo the 13th. Who he's named after, wrote 88 of these. and so most people, like Pope John Paul II right there, he wrote, I think it says right here, he only wrote like 16 or 14 of them. Yeah, and he goes through like the publishing of how many that he did. Yeah, 14. And then he kind of goes through there. Yeah, Pope Benedict only published like 3 or 4. And then Pope Francis published like 3 or 4, something like that. And so people are thinking like Pope Leo is probably going to try to go for the record. But it would be interesting.
That's pretty awesome. I haven't read it. I wonder if he used AI to write it.
No.
You don't think so?
No, because he's basically drawing from 2000 years of theology, and it's all these questions have already been answered. So it's really just up to him to go actually and just do the research. And I would imagine a lot of that stuff is not in sitting on OpenAI or Anthropic. That's probably why the Anthropic guy went over there. He's like, hey man, let me inside those Vatican library. I need access. Because that's not, yeah. So that's why I bet you like they have their own researcher in house, probably have their own database in house that they can. That he can look up kind of like a library, like you can at a library or something. So he probably drew from there. And I know he quoted a couple things in there from what I could gather. But to me, I think it scared a lot of people because it felt like the Pope was like overextending himself. But I don't think people understand like bishops and parishioners and people look to him as how to live their daily life. And so if they keep hearing about AI, and it's scaring people and people are asking in the community, then they need an answer. And so this is kind of like how he's talking through it. It's very, and it's kind of interesting too, because like me personally, like, I'm not building anything like software wise, but I do go to church and I do discern and I do check in with that in order to understand what I'm doing in my life and in my job. And I think most people do that who are Christian. So I think this is just kind of one of those things, just more on the artificial intelligence side. But if stackers are interested, this is like a really good summary down here.
Okay. What, can you give us like a few sentences, what you think the overall vibe is of the Vatican and how it relates to AI, what they're thinking about AI? Do you have a sense?
Well,
of
this
that?
Is what the, this is what the letter is supposed to represent. It's supposed to be their thought process, their thinking around how they're looking at this technology. And I think that one of the biggest fears, I think, is, and I know they hit on this, they're going to have to hit on this. They probably hit on it when they talk about like the human nature of things, but you don't want to, like, cause we've talked about it, like how cool would it get to be, have an implant and then you have like this thinking and it's like, but you could lose your humanity that way, right? You could lose yourself to where now you're treating people that are just human at a lower level of society versus somebody who's like abnormally human, who has like, you know, implants and all sorts of things. They're a lower tier class of human, when in reality, the pure human body and the spirit is perfect already, because it's in God's image. So it's kind of like one of those things where he talks about in here, like that'll probably get the most rise out of normal people who are into technology. Because even myself, I'm like, well, how is that any different than a cell phone or a computer? But in a sense, it is very different, because you're doing something to your body. And so there's a whole lot of stuff that has to be fleshed out. But Gregory Pines, like he says there, it's like time will just resolve these issues. Sometimes, as I always say, sometimes you just don't do anything. It's sometimes the right move.
What is it? I had another question. What is the role of a friar in the church?
I don't know. I think they belong to what are they called? I forget the name of them, but I know there's like dozens of them throughout America, and you could be one. I could be one. You just go join these communities of other men, and you live amongst other men, you know, praying to the Lord, and that's all you do every single day, and you live amongst them. That's my understanding of them.
But it's kind of like sort of a monk, but not.
Yeah, kind of like that. Yeah, you live like a really spiritual life and stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of movies that have that. Like, I think Nacho Libre was kind of something like that.
I've heard of the term friar a lot, but I've never really looked it up. I mean,
that's my understanding of it. I could be completely wrong.
Sounds cool.
Yeah. Anyways, but he's a really cool person to get some advice on this stuff, because he understands the technology side, because he uses it, and then he also understands, obviously, the biblical side, so he can explain things that aren't too scary. Because I think the biggest thing that the church does is they use these kind of racy terms, for lack of a better word, and people will be like, well, he said social justice. And it's like, yeah, so that's like a word, right? And in reality, he's not actually saying social justice by our definition. He's calling back to like 2,000 years, when there was actually something called social justice, but it was a different definition for it. So that's why people get all up in arms about this stuff. Anyways, so Wumble asked a question here. He said, could religious leaders provide useful guidance in navigating a possible AI future? I think so, but I'd love to hear what you think, Keon, because you're somebody that sees this maybe differently, but than others as far as AI.
Yeah, I'm not a devout Catholic. I would say they can. I think that's mostly their role. A lot of religious leaders' role is to guide culture, in a specific way towards specific goals. And I think they, you know, most people look to them to do that. So I do think they serve an important role in communicating to people how they should think about things. They are, you know, in many ways, the church is like an influencer empire. Not in a bad way, but like in a, they are the place that a lot of people look for like guidance on things. Mm-hmm. And so, I think it is important that they take positions and try to communicate from their point of view, how they think about emerging technologies or things that are happening in the world, so that people who look to them have some idea of how to process it and don't have to do it with like even less context.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think that's exactly what they're like aiming for. When I see a lot of that stuff, it almost makes me wish that Bitcoin kind of had that kind of like elite class of spiritual leaders that were just about the core beliefs of Bitcoin. But you say stuff like that, people are like, oh, no, you can't do that because of, you know, so. Go ahead.
That's perhaps what some of the nonprofits are aiming to do, is to be these kind of centers where maybe profit isn't the motive, and they're more so just focused on the real problems. I don't know if it materializes that way, but I think that's the intention, is to influence, but not from a perspective of like self gain. And to influence from a perspective, like, I've thought about this a lot, I care about it a lot, and I'm very close to it, and you're maybe not so close to it, and I'm trying to help. I think it's like the motivation behind a lot of the nonprofit activity in Bitcoin. And so perhaps we'll get there. It's not as clean. There aren't as many rules.
We just don't have that much history when it comes to
We don't have a lot of discipline either. I think, you know, built into Christianity is a lot of rules and discipline and
centuries.
Yeah, a generic nonprofit doesn't necessarily, like, they kind of write their own rule book.
Who knows? But maybe Bitcoin can get to a point where it gets to a century year old, and then you start building some sort of council around that, and who knows?
Yeah.
It could definitely evolve that way.
I think that's a lot of the vision a lot of Bitcoiners have. For some reason, it gets Bitcoin gets lumped in with like marble statues and like the Roman Empire and stuff. Like, I see a lot, as far as visual media stuff. Yeah. For some reason, those two are together. So perhaps that's where people are already thinking of going.
Yeah. You had some posts. You had, the first one was the Bitcoin Depression Index. What's this?
Yeah, this looks like content marketing for the BitKit wallet and PubKey by John Carvalho and team. I didn't actually watch this video. This is like an AI generated version of the. Oh, I didn't realize.
Is that the beef from the Spiral thing?
That's the Cash App. Mr. Bitcoin, I think.
Oh, I didn't know they went in.
Here comes Bitcoin.
Oh, John's talking there. That's hilarious. Yeah, I didn't watch this either. But I see a button, I press it. Okay. So what is it? You take the test?
I just took the test. But you can determine how disillusioned you are with Bitcoin, what your Bitcoin depression level is. I thought it was a fun little content marketing hack. I scored 49, which suggests it says I'm ideologically liquidated, is what it says. The ETFs, the politicians, the influencers. You went long on the revolution and got margin called by reality, is what it says.
Goes through your head now when you hear hyper Bitcoinization. What if you have a different, I have three more questions. Looking at Bitcoin Culture Today, what feels the most true? Yeah, I think it's just growing up. Have you just recently noticed that you have been listening to the same nine exact podcast for 9 years now? Dang, how long has this podcast been around? 3 years or 4 years? Yeah,
four, I think. Maybe
four. Wow.
Maybe three.
Wow. Right. Okay. No, there's still plenty of people out there. which is it takes soon. Yeah, I think there's fresh thinking out there. When someone new asks you to explain Bitcoin, you feel exhausted, conflicted. To ruin this person.
I said cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You honestly believe about Bitcoin's future as a tool of financial liberation. Yeah, I think that's...
Oh, dang. Wow.
Yeah.
It's you aren't very depressed. Yeah.
No, it's because... I think it's because I do all the like stuff that we do with PlubLab, and so it's... I think I would have already quit already if I was depressed about it. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't keep going to different places around the world and helping people around the world and feel depressed about Bitcoin. That's what I've come to realize.
Yeah, I don't feel particularly depressed about Bitcoin, but it did score me pretty high. I'm kind of, I mostly just, yeah, I guess maybe I am. Maybe I'm just not, I'm not aware of it somehow, but.
That's cool.
Pretty good thing.
The next one that you had was more Square Venture spending via Lightning is so interesting and exciting. What's this?
Yeah, this is another one from this person who doesn't have a real name, and they just have a bunch of like a random set of characters. But they were looking for more Square merchants. I think we covered it last week. Maybe a week before, where they went around a shopping center and tried to find Square merchants that would accept Bitcoin and eventually found one. In this case, they gush about Bitcoin and how excited they are to use it, which is awesome to hear. They clearly probably rank pretty lowly on the Bitcoin depression index. And they say they said in the Pacific Northwest, they went to a coffee shop or a shop to, and they noticed had a Square terminal, asked them if they could use Bitcoin. And I said they got kind of a side eye or kind of a judgmental look from the person at the register, where they felt insulted, sort of, that they asked if they accepted Bitcoin. And then he said they moved on, and they eventually found someone who didn't know that their Square terminal accepted Bitcoin and did accept Bitcoin, and that they were able to pay for their cold brew via Bitcoin. And then they kind of discuss where, how people aren't ready yet, but they're still excited about it because they think it is a meaningful improvement and people will benefit a lot from it. But they still have that energy. They're like clearly like a glass half full optimistic type of dude. So that's great.
Yeah. Cool. The next one you had was... Yeah, oh, that one's already got that one there. What was the last one? F2 pool founder who controls 11% of hash rate to lead first SpaceX mission to Mars. What's this?
Yeah, so F2 pool is one of the largest, or a very large mining pool, like quite significant, double-digit percentage of hash rate. I think it's something like 160 exahash or something. Very big. And one of the founders, the co-founders, Chen Wang, is going to lead up the mission to Mars. SpaceX's first like human man mission to Mars.
This guy,
that's the guy.
Wow.
Yeah, it's supposed to take 2 years. They're gonna fly close to the moon, and then. Like relatively low altitude, fly close to the moon. And then from the moon, they're going to go fly high altitude around Mars, probably. I think it's around. I would guess it's around.
Is he in space right now, or is this like a ChatGPT image or something?
Oh, I would guess that he might have done like one of the earlier private space flights, and this might be a picture from that. He's clearly really into this, because I don't think you sign up for this kind of thing unless you kind of want your whole life to be about it.
No, look at that picture. He's clearly into his laptop or his iPad instead of looking at the Earth, which apparently, if you like, Neil Armstrong says was like one of his favorite moments of his entire life. And yet, this guy's just looking at the.
But it could be a video call. So I don't know, but you're right. It could be.
Why would you not be looking out the window?
More than likely, it's Photoshop.
So I took the train from the airport to Union Station. Dude, mountains, bro. Never seen mountains like that. Gorgeous.
Mountains are awesome.
Gorgeous, Keon. And I'm in awe. I'm like, look at these mountains. And this guy's like, Earth's right there. And he's just like, nah, I'm in my iPad.
Well, he is the founder of a really large mining pool. So maybe he likes looking at a computer. He said, I watched a short clip of him where SpaceX interviewed him. And he's like, I'm the type of person who can sit on a flight and just watch the plane travel, you know, like they have that map, yeah, where the plane will travel across. He's like, I can sit for a really long flight and just watch that thing. Like,
maybe that's what he's doing. He's just watching.
Maybe he's watching the
trajectory. Just stayed on Earth for that. Now, it sounds cool, though. That sounds really cool.
No, but it is like a big thing. It's like he's risking his life. He's going to be part of a few people who are doing this thing for the first time. Humans haven't gone that far into space before.
We'll see, though. I don't. Is he going to come back or is he just stuck there?
They come back. It's a 2-year journey. So that's like kind of what they're doing it for, is mostly to
fly-by.
Do all kinds of research and try to make it seem more tangible, make it seem more real so they can convince more people.
2 years is a long time, man. I've seen a lot of sci-fi movies. It can go really bad in a lot of number of ways. Maybe he comes back and he has some sort of virus and who knows.
Yeah. Yeah.
You ever see
Red Planet? I watch a lot of Star Trek, I know.
Yeah.
Red Planet's
a really good one. That was a Brian De Palma one. There's all sorts of Mars movies. Vampires on Mars, I think it's called, or something like that. It's like a John Carpenter one.
That sounds John Carpenter like. Yeah,
a lot of good ones. Yeah. Well, that's cool. So I think that's everything. Oh, I had one last post. So this got posted in the privacy territory. Israeli tech exposes users of Musk's Starlink satellite-based internet. So this firm called Target Team is operating from Cyprus, has developed a system called Stargets that, according to sales materials, can track close to 1 million Starlink terminals worldwide. So this here, let me see if I can find it here. So that's it right there. I don't know if you can see that. You basically can look at every single, like if you're connected out wherever you are, so you have a Starlink and you're connected, they could find you basically with the software. Yeah. And so obviously when you have something like that, we were just talking about getting doxxed and everything like that. Imagine if you're somebody on whatever side of the battle line and they're able to identify where you're exactly at. Like that can expose you in a number of different ways. So yeah, they're just calling it out, and you're seeing obviously the protests and all the stuff happening in Iran and all that sort of thing. But I just think from like a privacy perspective, this is nuts, dude. Like, are you more comfortable getting a Starlink now? Are you less comfortable? Does it not matter since everybody has access to this? Like, what do you think about this, Keon? I know you haven't read the piece, but.
Yeah, me specifically, I don't really know, but this, you know, everyone should know that if they're not using a VPN or Tor or, you know, some other kind of overlay on their internet traffic, this is already the case. It's a little bit different if you have like a Starlink on your RV or, you know, you're traveling around and you expect that you aren't getting tracked, but you are. If you thought Starlink was somehow different, it doesn't appear so. It's just like a consequence of the way the internet works, I think. And the way that Starlink was built, and probably in many ways probably was more convenient to build it in a way where the network itself knew where you are, so that it could orient its system of satellites toward you. So
it does make you think, like through the fog of war, it does make you then question, like, after a certain point, is it maybe it's just better to settle our differences without war? I mean, after a certain point, you get to stuff like this where it's like, okay, like now you can find me this way, right? And I'm sending out drones, and before you couldn't find me, but now you can find me this way. It just gets to a certain point where you have to really start realizing the reality of the situation, and that there will always be another, like it's like a cat and mouse game. but maybe just meeting people in the middle or talking it out might lead to better results. That's what I got out of this after I read it. I was like, okay, this is just maybe a funny way of getting people to meet and talk, therefore not getting expunged from the earth once they get doxxed. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if this solves war. Or like, yeah, total de-anonymization. Yeah, solves war. I don't think it does. I think people, you know, I don't think war is waged because people don't know that what you're doing or where you are. But it does suggest that, yeah, your enemies might have a lot, like that war involves a lot of information, and that is maybe a large component of war these days is how much information you can gather. And that has been the case maybe for a very long time, and maybe always, that having a lot of information, having access to the right information gives you a significant advantage in war.
Yeah. Anyways, thought that was interesting. I think that's all the posts. Last one we had was Meta. So we had Meta this week. Brink, Mike Schmidt came on board for a AMA that Scoresby set up, I believe. What did you think about this one, Keon? Did you get
a I haven't. I got a few questions in, but I did not have the time to go through and read the other questions yet.
I was reading it earlier this morning, just waiting, but I didn't get to finish it all. I scanned most of it. I think there's, let me see what the top question was. Oh, here it goes. So yeah, end of the mic. Dev said, "Who is your favorite technical communicator?" And then Schmitty said, "Jonas Nick came to mind first, but of course he mentioned merch as well." And then Soru was on there asking a lot of questions.
Yeah, and you know, we know Soru well. And he presented last month
Feels like last month.
Bitcoin Builder,
yeah. Cool stuff. Check it out if you haven't read it. Who's on next week? Is there another AMA coming on next week?
We have Hoddle Tarantula. Yeah.
There you go. You guys should ask him about his look.
Does he have a good look?
No, he's told me in person in 21 why he looks the way he looks, and it was a really great answer. So.
Oh, okay. Well, I will ask him about his look. I didn't know. I haven't seen him before, so I don't know how he looks.
Yeah. Really cool guy. Let me see here, and I think that's everything. Go back. Yeah, I think that's everything. Do we get a zine? No zine. And then we have a lot of comments. So a lot of people are, just saying things. I don't know if there's anything that sticks out there. We're getting more than stay in your lane these days is all I'm trying to get across here.
They don't trust graphing. They think it's like a psyop. Wow, that's weird. Paintball guns. Then,
a lot of people were interested in the whole flock camera stuff that we were talking about last week. I didn't feel like we did it justice, but maybe by not giving it, doing it, really explain it really well, gets people to comment. I've come to realize.
they're like these idiots. Let me tell
the worst to explain things I've noticed. More comments you'll get. More engagement you'll get. Being cool about things, turns out.
Yeah, maybe that explains a lot of the influencers we see around
this way. The one of the funny ones was this one that goes, "This is really going to hurt about 2% of deadbeat dads. Don't think most of them are big travelers or jet setters," when we were talking about the passport stuff.
100%. I think we said that in the thing.
But that's pretty much it. Let's jump into Top Cowboys. Let's see if we got the where's that? Oh, it's right here. Getting on every week. We go and check out the Top Cowboys. Who's cowboying this week, Keon?
Well, we got lots of people cowboying. There's all kinds of cows and all kinds of boys on Stacker News, and it looks like I'm, other than Stacker and hiding, I am in the running. It's surprising that I lost my cowboy hat a few years ago when I was at an EDM concert.
Really?
That's what EDM does to you, to kids.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I lost it then, and that's why I'm behind. Blockchain Boo, Gray Ruby, lots of Stackers in hiding. preserving their privacy. Scoresby, Public Enemy, OT, We Are All Satoshi, 117, Crypto Sensei. Crypto Sensei is climbing up there. They've been posting. We have a new Japan territory, and they've been posting in there because their wife is Japanese.
Oh, wow.
I think they travel there a lot, so they know quite a bit about that, maintaining that. Serez, Billy the Ked. I don't know what else we got there. I can't scroll. We have Machiavelli, 23. They post, I think they do a lot of stonework. They do like countertops and stuff. Not sure where they're located. I'd guess South or Central America. Lots of stackers on hiding. GSC 360 is a big fan of sports territory. Satswise, which is an online marketplace for books that only accepts Bitcoin, Bitcoin only. Yeah. I bought a bunch of books from them. I think they're sitting on my floor over there, but I bought like 6 books from them. It's pretty great, run by Siggy, a longtime stacker. Anyway, okay. It goes on and on.
A lot of people, a lot of stackers joining. Is Stacker News growing more? I feel like it's getting bigger this year. Are there more people coming in because it's a bear market?
We have historically done pretty good during bear markets. It does feel like we're getting a few more new people than we had before. Strange is like nothing's really changed too much, but yeah, it does feel like things have picked up a little bit.
Feels more active than I remember it maybe 2 months ago or 3 months ago.
Yeah, there are like seasons to these things, so just
happens. Cool stuff. I think that's all we got. There's nothing else to cover. Keon, what are you doing this week? Or this
weekend? What am I doing? I don't know what I'm doing this weekend. It's the last weekend of the month, which suggests nothing, but maybe that means something. I'll probably just do my usual thing and work. Mm-hmm. And I need to do laundry. Oh, one of our mutual friends is having a birthday party, and they're going to be on the lake in Austin. They're going to do like a thing on the lake in Austin.
Damn.
And I'll be there. You're out of town, but you won't be there. But I haven't been to the lake in Austin since I moved here, really. But
dude, you should jump in the water.
I don't think I will. It's like I think I'll probably wear a hoodie out there on the water and just do the fat guy thing, you know, where it's just.
No. Dude, we're all family at this point. It doesn't matter.
I don't know. I don't need other men knowing what my nipples look like.
I think you're too self-conscious.
Oh, I mean, that's definitely my like primary trait. But that's what I'm going to do. That should be kind of fun.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, I haven't been out there in a while. How about you? What are you doing? You're probably going to have.
Oh yeah, so we're gonna go to that Meow Wolf thing. Never been there. I got like a lot of tips on the way over here though. People are like, oh, look out for this. Look out for this. There's a mystery in this. So I'm looking forward to that. I think we're going to do something tomorrow night because we're going to go watch the Spurs game because the Spurs went to Game 7. Can you believe it? Dude,
I can't.
It's freaking nuts, dude. It's been a hell of a series. So we're going to watch that and then probably just hang out. We're just going to hang out. Yeah.
Yeah,
so.
you guys don't do the only bachelor party I've been to. We went and did like kind of typical bachelor party things in San Francisco. Yeah. We went to like a strip club. We did like cigars, that kind of stuff. You guys aren't doing that.
No, we're they're all, most of them are married, and then I'm like, I don't.
You're married to God. Yeah.
Well, it's not even that. It's just more like I'm just old. I don't know how to explain it, and that doesn't. I think once you get in your 40s, you just don't. That kind of stuff doesn't move me the same way like it did when I was a younger kid. If that makes any sense.
It does make sense, but yeah. I see a lot of old guys at strip clubs. They're trying to get moved. That's why they're there. You know?
Yeah. I feel like for me, the thing that really gets me going these days is like my work, some cool concert or a movie or like some really new restaurant I can try out. Or just hanging out with my friends, right? Like or you guys or yeah, like stuff like that. That's what really gets me going these days. I mean, what I would really want to do is just get like on an ATV and like a motorcycle and just drive up the mountains. I think that would be fun. That to me sounds way more fun.
I mean, you could do both, really. I mean, one's a daytime activity, one's a nighttime activity, but
yeah,
to each their own.
Yeah. But yeah, I'll be back on Monday. It should be a short trip. But yeah, Stackers, have yourself a great weekend. Key on.
Zap.
All right.